Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Spanning the nerd world and feeding your fandom. It's time for the Down and Nerdy Podcast. Here's your host, James Witham.
What a great week to spend some time in Patience, Colorado. It is episode 352 of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. I'm James Witham. Hopefully you already watched Resident Alien on Sci-Fi when it premiered this past week, because man, do we have a lot to talk about when it comes to that show this week. I got a chance to talk to quite a few members of the cast about the series, actually. Sarah Tomko, Alice Wetterland, Corey Reynolds, Levi Filer, all here to talk to me about Resident Alien from Sci-Fi. Maybe we get a little, maybe just a little spoilery on the first episode if you haven't seen it yet, and man, it was such a good one, too. Also going to be talking about our new sponsor this week, Care Of, and how you can get some amazing vitamins and supplements delivered right to your door. There's some great comics to talk about this week, some very, very interesting nerd news. But starting things off, it's going to be a little chilly. Going to be talking about the season 2 premiere of Snowpiercer. Going to drop some spoilers while we're at it next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is Karen Ashley from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and you're listening to Down and Nerdy Podcast.
It's all connected, literally, as we start the second season of Snowpiercer on TNT. And boy, was there a lot going on in this first episode of season 2. So big spoilers here coming up as the episode's already aired. So let's talk some spoilers. You got Big Alice connected to the Snowpiercer now, right? So here's the most interesting thing that happened right off the bat. And I don't know why I didn't think about this when I was watching the trailers. The tail is not the tail anymore. So now it's like this border between the two trains. And the war always happens on the border, right? That's like the front line. So that's where things are going to go down. And it goes down in this episode. Mr. Wilford doesn't waste any time playing hardball either. Apparently, if you stop the train, the temperature just drops and everybody dies. That's another thing you kind of forget when you watch this show and you get so deep into this, into the character building that they've done in season 1. So Mr. Wilford uses Melanie's daughter, Alex, as his like collector or enforcer. And it turns out there's a lot more to her character than meets the eyes we're going through this first episode. So you've got everybody on Snowpiercer running around trying to save their lives by getting all these items. And then meanwhile, you've got Melanie, who spent way too much time outside the train. I was really starting to, you know, get my blood pressure was going up. I'm like, get back on the train. And they're even yelling at her, get back on the train. I'm like, yeah, get your ass back on the train. What are you doing? Especially when you see that hole go in her suit. That was not good. So when she does finally get back on the train, it's on the Big Alice side. And we get to see this confrontation right off the bat between Melanie and Mr. Wilford. And they've got history. And Mr. Wilford's like, you stole my train, I want it back. And there's a lot more complicated than that, but that's kind of the gist of it, okay? And remember, Melinda doesn't even know her daughter is alive. And Mr. Wilford has completely brainwashed Alex. And you want to talk about using someone as a pawn against someone else. That's what Mr. Wilford tries to do here, but Melanie's such an interesting and strong character. While Alex is certainly a weakness for her, she doesn't let that affect what she needs to do to survive and to basically, I mean, for a lack of better way of putting it, get what she wants. So, and she knows what her endgame needs to be. And if Melanie's nothing, she's a survivor, okay? You might not have liked her right away in first season, but she's tough. And she really holds tough against Mr. Wilford and everything that he's trying to do. And she even says, hey, you know, Layton's in charge of the Snowpiercer now. You want your train back, talk to him. Mr. Wilford doesn't seem to care about that. And as much as he tries to force Melanie to do something, she just doesn't. She does not budge. And she takes some serious risks, too, by the way. Like, that explosion thing that happens at the end of the first episode, that was a huge risk on her part. But boy, did it pay off. Now, you go back on the Snowpiercer side, and, you know, Layton's already got this, you know, really, you know, very loose democracy right now, right? That's what he's trying to preach to everyone on Snowpiercer, right? You know, the whole everybody's equal thing, everybody gets a voice. But then he's got to deal with this kind of incursion from the group from Big Alice and how they're going to survive because they seem to have no control over anything that's going on now. And he's got the whole thing with, you know, his babies on board literally now. And not everybody is really trusting what Layton is selling. And that is a big problem for him. And he's got this very shaky leadership going on here, and not the best relationship with the folks from hospitality either, by the way. I mean, you can kind of understand that, but at the same time, you've got some people that are willing to all band together and others not so much. And then everything that's going on now with Big Alice just ramps that up even more. So while that wasn't a huge focus, I didn't think of this episode, yeah, it certainly had to be somewhat of a focus. Their people are still dying, but it's just a different war this time, and you could argue an even bigger war than the one they just fought. So imagine going to war to win your freedom and then having to go on a complete other war immediately right after that. You're battle weary and you've got to jump right in to this other war. And not to mention, the other side, by the way, has this guy Bob. And I don't know who the hell Bob is, where he came from, why he doesn't seem to be affected by the cold at all, but he is a beast of a man. It's like when you watch Game of Thrones and you had the mountain, right? And anytime you saw the mountain, you're like, oh shit, everybody's dead, right? That's exactly how you felt, right? Nobody's getting through this dude. That's kind of how you feel about Bob. And the second Bob has to actually go against the Snowpiercer group, he just starts mowing these people down. And remember, they invade Big Alice and Bob knows all the tricks. That was not at all a good move. And again, that's another way that they could possibly question Layton's leadership. And Layton didn't exactly let everybody know that he was going to do this either, by the way. So that's a problem. So I don't know why this guy's so strong or why the cold doesn't bother him, but we got to figure that out. And there was something very quick that happened in this episode where you've got these scientists, right? The ones that help cure Melanie's frostbite, or at least treat it anyway. And they have this, you know, like miracle salve. They're like, okay, just put this on, you'll be good to go. And you figure they're going to play a role, especially, and then you see Bob, you're like, they had to have something to do with that. So these scientists, I think, are going to be way more important at some point in the season. I'm not saying it's going to be in the middle, in the next episode. I don't know. I will tell you that they will be more important here at some point, and we will hear from them again. But I love Sean Bean as Mr. Wilford. And the trailer does not do it justice. I will say that. I thought he was going to be good by the trailer. I think he's really, really good. You're going to hate this guy. If you haven't watched the episode yet, you're going to hate him. There's no question about that. Question is, will he survive this season, though? That's not exactly something Sean Bean does a lot. So he's fantastic. The chemistry between he and Jennifer Connelly's Melanie is so off the charts. And Jennifer Connelly, I think, really stepped up her game, too, in the second season. I thought she was good last season. She was just as good, if not better, in this first episode of season two of Snowpiercer. So, I mean, who knows? Every Monday night, we get to find out a next chapter and what's going to be a very interesting second season. That's going to do it for my spoiler-filled review of Snowpiercer from TNT. Up next, let's dive in to the brand-new Resident Alien series from Sci-Fi. Plenty of members of the cast joining me next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is comic book writer Peter Hogan, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
There's a new doctor in the house, and he wears more faces than you actually know. Sci-Fi's Resident Alien is finally here, of course, based on the Dark Horse comic story. And I actually got a chance to sit down with quite a few members of the cast, actually, to talk about this upcoming season, this first season. And I will tell you, there will be some minor spoilers here for the first episode if you haven't seen it yet. So in all of my interviews, some minor spoilers going to be coming up for this first episode. So why not kick things off the right way, right? With Sarah Tomko, who plays Asta on the show, and then you also have Alice Wetterlund, who plays Darcy. It's so fun to talk to them. Let's see what they had to say about this first season of Resident Alien. Right from the start, in the first episode of this series, I mean, you can tell it has a little bit of everything. It's not necessarily a comedy, not necessarily a drama. It's not necessarily purely sci-fi. So how would you both kind of describe it?
A dramedy.
A sci-com drama.
Psychopomedies, maybe. And there's all kinds of different ways you could describe it, I guess.
Sci-com drama.
Relatable, human, messy dramedy.
messy but clean. Yes, messy, but Amblin wants us to say that.
Clean, messy.
messy but clean. I like that. I like that. Now, you could see also that there's, I mean, something very off about Harry. I think that's an easy way to describe it. So it seems like everybody realizes it, but without really spoiling anything, what can you tell us about Asta and Darcy's first impression of him?
Darcy's turned on, and I'm gonna
Darcy's intrigued. Darcy's intrigued, to say the least. Honestly, Harry Van Der Spiegel is like some of the dudes on my baseball team. There's this one guy who never wears a shirt, and he lives in a boat and is monosyllabic. And you're like, once you've met enough people, you know, you're just like, oh, Harry's not that weird. Asta has a more grounded reaction, I think.
Asta's, first of all, he comes in acting like he knows what he's doing as a doctor, and it's obvious that he really is so bizarre at sniffing body parts and like what is going on in that very first pilot, you know, that she is so like offended the way he's handling a man she really respected, but then also she's like intrigued, and he says things so truthfully, just like word vomit coming out of his mouth, and she's had a hard time trusting men. So it's almost like a complete opposite of her normal experience with men. And then she starts to feel like, well, maybe this is a guy I can trust, actually. And then Darcy's turned on. So, and that's her best friend. So she's like, oh yeah, he can't be that bad, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I never thought about how Darcy being attracted to him makes Asta kind of have to give him a chance.
Yeah, makes me feel safe, like a little bit safer.
Yeah, oh, this is just another dude that, she can handle him.
I mean, you could tell right away when you walk into the bar, though, that Darcy's the one you need to go to get answers, right? Because she's the bartender, she's got the pulse of the town, so how plugged in is she to patients?
Yeah, I mean, patience is the vortex that keeps sucking Darcy back. And, you know, she's reluctant, but she is the town soothsayer. She knows everything about it, and she knows all the gossip and all the different, you know, she's incredibly bored by it, but she knows it.
So, Sarah, I feel like, you know, Harry is a big focus of the show, obviously, but we get to find out quite a bit about Asta's backstory in this very first episode. So were you surprised to find out the fans would get to know her so quickly in this first episode?
I was surprised and grateful, to be quite honest, because I think getting right to the messy and vulnerable is exactly where we need to begin. It's the best place. She's picking herself up after this horrifically like abusive relationship and having to go back to live with her father in a town where she grew up, but because she's adopted, she feels like, you know, she doesn't quite fit in or belong anywhere in any one box. And then here comes this guy that she's so like weirded out by, and yet he feels like somebody that also maybe doesn't belong. And so there feels like this wonderful familiarity and friendship there. And I think it's so nice to just get right to the fact that a human and an alien maybe do have more in common. And I think that that is like, right off the bat, the thing that you learn about Asta and Harry. And I think that is what is going to pull people in.
So it's clear that you guys are having a blast with this show. I mean, right from the jump. But I think, I mean, we've talked about some serious stuff here. I think this is the question that the world really wants to know, though. How well do aliens hold their liquor?
poorly.
Yes.
Who knew that if War of the Worlds had been remade, it wouldn't be the bugs that all we needed to do was give those fuckers a shot or two, you know?
And then they would just chill out. My favorite scene is when he is like, what is that? And then he's like, can I have another? Which is so
very relatable.
I love at the end how Asta comes in and Superman is like, please no, and takes the shot out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so funny to witness him experiencing that for the first time, and yet his inner dialogue that you're hearing, like, why would people do this? I must do it more. It's just it's like a beautiful reminder of how, again, fucked up we are.
Yeah, we've sworn more in this meeting with you, James, and the rest of the morning.
You're welcome.
So really quickly, who do you think, obviously no spoilers, but who would handle the reveal of Harry's secret better, you think, Darcy or Asta?
Asta, for sure. Right? Because, maybe.
I finally trust the guy, finally, and then he tells me the biggest
lie. And he's an alien.
Yeah, but like Asta's kind of like ooey gooey, like, you know, Asta definitely has more of a grip of spirituality. Like Darcy's world, I mean, Darcy's a pure atheist. She's definitely like, there's no God. She's nihilistic. And so to arrive at the conclusion that there is life on other planets and other galaxies that have, that is too big of a concept, I think, for her, you know, self-centered world.
I don't know. I feel like you would be so turned on by it. Like,
see, that was my thought too, actually. That's why I asked.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, she'd probably be like, cool.
Yeah, she's down for whatever.
It's
so
a
I
notch
figured,
on her belt that she didn't expect to get.
Nice, nice. Awesome, awesome. Well, can't wait for everybody to see it. It's January 27th on Sci-Fi. That's a Wednesday. Ladies, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you very much, James. Thanks for being here.
But why stop there when we can bring the law and order to the show as well? That's right. I was also joined by Corey Reynolds, who of course plays Sheriff Mike, and Levi Filer, who plays Mayor Hawthorne. And I got to talk to them about what they think about season one as well. Check it out. All right, Corey, Levi, I know that sometimes when you go into comic book adaptations like this, it's either, you know, read the comic, get familiar with the story, or don't read the comic, we don't want you to be influenced with the story. So going into this, how familiar were you with Peter Hogan's original work?
I was not familiar with it. And my wife, once I booked the show, she bought me the, you know, the first issue of the, and I read that one. And then Chris was like, maybe keep yourself open. Maybe don't read it too much because we're taking the foundation, but we're kind of building something different. So I don't want you to be expecting one thing and something else happens. So I've just been reading the scripts as opposed to following the comic all the way through.
I remember asking Chris specifically, I was like, should I, you know, I want to like be as prepared as possible. Should I read the comics? And he was like, no, you know, your character is basically not you in the comics. He's kind of this like older, like used car salesman of a mayor with like a plaid jacket and stuff. And so, and also there was going to be kind of a almost like a spoiler of like what was going to happen in this season that we were filming. So I kind of wanted to wait until we were done filming to read the comics. So I actually just ordered the comics and I'm waiting for them to get here I can read them. Nice.
My character is very different in the comics as well.
Yeah.
I was going to say that, speaking of different, I feel like you guys' characters actually couldn't be more different, especially early on in the season. So kind of talk about both you guys, the dynamic between the two of them.
You know, I think there's a lot of asymmetry between the two of them, whereas Sheriff Mike is confident and loud and aggressive and set in his ways. I think Mayor Ben is kind and compassionate and understanding and patient. Where
naive. They're naive.
Maybe a little naive. You know, and I think that Mike sees a lot of that as a weakness, but ultimately, I think the two of them together, I was just talking about this a second ago. I kind of feel like the two of them together is kind of like a Reese's Pieces, you know, the chocolate and the peanut butter coming together and it makes something delicious, because when we're in scenes together, we can play off of each other, off of those two characters and their differences, and have a lot of fun with it. But they are very different. Very different.
I like the Reese's Pieces. I haven't heard you.
I love Reese's Pieces too. So I mean,
there
yeah,
you go,
let's
man.
Do
you
that. Let's saying? Do that. Yeah,
that makes sense, right? Yeah. It'd be like, hey, it. You got your chocolate and my peanut butter. Hey, you got your peanut butter and my chocolate. And then you remember those commercials?
Great combination.
People were walking. They bump into each other, and I like you know, their chocolate falling. So that's kind of who we are.
So now, Corey, it seems like the sheriff's radar is way up when it comes to Harry. Is it just good instincts, you think, being a good cop, or is he just or is Harry just that weird?
I think Sheriff Mike is suspicious of everyone but himself. I think he sees everyone as having something to hide. And I think he also sees himself and his sheriff's department to a lesser degree than himself, but himself as the only thing keeping patients from like turning into Mad Max world. Like I think he sees himself as the arbiter of protection for the city. And he takes it very seriously. But I think, you know, obviously, I don't think there's nearly enough crime, well, up until Harry's arrival, to warrant such suspicion on his part.
So, Levi, this might be a teeny bit of a spoiler for the premiere, but Ben's son, Max, actually has a pretty big secret in this first episode. But as a dad myself, I know that kids can come up with some crazy stuff. So how much will that secret actually play out in future episodes?
Yeah, it's a big part of especially Mayor Ben's my storyline in the show. I mean, because it kind of obviously when Max first is like the doctor's an alien, we're like, okay, like he's having like, you know, a childlike fantasy, but then he kind of refuses to let that go and move on from it. And so we start to, it goes from being like, oh, kids will be kids to like, oh, is there something wrong with our kid? Like, do we need to seek professional help with this? And so that becomes a bit of the storyline as well that we'll see in later episodes.
Now, Corey, you talked about how hard-nosed the sheriff actually was. What do you think makes Liv the perfect partner for him?
Her patience with him, her unique ability to see kindness where others cannot. I think that she's the first one to completely see Mike as the insecure person he really is. And I think that, first of all, I love Elizabeth Bowman. She's the best partner that you could have, like whether it be on the police force or as an actor with scene work, she is fucking fantastic. But I think that she's also rooted in the town. She's been there her whole life. And she has a kindness to her and a warmth to her that kind of helps melt the ice of him a little bit. I think ultimately, if she can see something in him that others cannot see, then the audience may also see something like that, you know, as well. Because I told Chris, I was like, I don't know how long people gonna like Sheriff Mike with him just being fucking mean to everybody every fucking episode. You know what I mean? I don't know how long we're gonna be able to, you know, play that. But she brings something out in him over the course of the season that I think will be difficult and maybe eventually wonderful for the audience to experience.
Excellent. Thank you guys so much. Can't wait for everybody to see it.
Thank you, James. Be well, brother.
And if you've already seen it, you know exactly how amazing all of them were in that premiere episode. It was just so much fun, but there was a lot of really serious, detailed character storytelling in the first episode of Resident Alien from Sci-Fi. If you want my full review of the episode, go to downandnerdypodcast.com. But it was just such a joy to watch, and I can't wait for you guys to see the rest of the season as well. This week, the Down and Nerdy Podcast is brought to you by Care Of, a wellness brand that makes it easy to maintain your health goals with customized vitamin plans that...
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Help you feel your best. And I'll admit, but maybe you don't know what it is that would make you feel your best, right? Maybe you need a little help. I certainly know I did. I don't necessarily know what I'm missing either. And that's one of the beauty parts about Care Of, is that you go to takecareof.com and you take the really quick and easy online quiz. It asks you a few questions. It takes less than 5 minutes. At the end, you get this tailored, customized plan of vitamins and supplements and powders to say, if you take this, here's what it might help do for you. And there's, so you can check out the studies for all of this. There is a very big emphasis on quality from Care Of. They're super transparent about the research and sourcing behind each one of their products. And it's all right there. There's no mystery to what you're going to be getting. And your recommendations come in daily in individually wrapped packets that are perfect for getting back into a routine. It's super easy. You just take the packet and you've got your daily dose right there for you. And for me, that means not, you know, fumbling around with a bunch of different bottles every day and, oh, well, did I take this? Did I not take this today? I'll know because they were in my packet for the day and it has my name on it. I'll make it even easier for you. Let's get you 50% off your first order from Care Of. Go to takecareof.com and enter promo code NERDY50. This will help you get a personally tailored approach to your unique health needs. This is for you. Do something for yourself. Go to takecareof.com, enter promo code NERDY50 to get 50% off your first order from Care Of and start taking better care of yourself and make that your resolution for the rest of this year with Care Of. Once again, thanks to the wonderful cast of Resident Alien, Sarah Tomko, Alice Waterland, Corey Reynolds, and Levi Filer for joining me this week to talk about the amazing new sci-fi series. Up next, hey, that show is based on a comic. Let's talk about some comics. It's what we're reading next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is Matt Kent, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Long boxes or hard drives, doesn't matter where you store them, whatever you're reading on, it's time for what we're reading and another dive in to DC's Future State. And yes, I said that on purpose because I'm talking about Aquaman number one from DC in the Future State line. Brandon Thomas writing this one. Daniel Sempere on the art here. Adriana Lucas on the colors. Clayton Cowles on the letters. Going to be a little bit spoilery on this one, so just beware of that as we dive in, because Jackson Hyde, yes, Black Manta's son, is Aquaman in this story. And also Andy, Arthur and Mara's daughter, is Aquawoman or Aqualass, whatever you want to call her. I mean, she prefers one over the other. If you read the book, you'll know that. But I digress. I actually feel like Jackson Hyde's look is very familiar in this book, though. And I wonder if anybody else picked up on that. Maybe it was just me. Anyway, we actually have, they have this very interesting dynamic between the two of them. It's almost like a Jedi Padawan style relationship where Andy is very much Anakin in this story, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, if I was to draw a parallel to this, I would say that Andy is definitely an Anakin style Padawan in this story. And they kind of discover what seemed to be some sort of, and this is the biggest spoiler I'm going to give for this, It's like a universe hopping or dimensional hopping ocean called the Confluence. So basically they stumble upon this almost by accident too, by the way. So they're battling something pretty huge in the middle of all this. And when something happens to Andy, I should say that this takes place several years before what ends up being the present in this book. I should say that. So something ends up happening to Andy. I won't tell you what that is, but several years later, Jackson's actually been in prison for a while, apparently, but, you know, not for long, because, you know, how could you hold an Aquaman as a prisoner? But the biggest spoiler in this book actually revolves around Andy's fate, or what could have been her fate, or what could be her fate. That is the biggest question mark that surrounds this book. And I will say this, the dynamic between Jackson and Andy is easily the best part of this story. But things are a bit jumbled throughout here. I mean, the foundation is good, but I just don't feel like this there's a firm foundation for this book. I'm just not sure that it's, I don't know, there was just something about it, I couldn't put my finger on it, that I'm like, something's keeping this book from being great, and I don't know what it is. Because the art's actually excellent, and the colors really shine through in the book's biggest moments. And man, do the colors matter at the end of this book, too. I will tell you that much right now without spoiling anything. If this book just finds a bit of better balance and clarity, I think they could really have something here. And again, maybe it's just something I'm missing. Maybe it's just me. You could love it. I know that certainly I've read some other reviews on Twitter and stuff like that, that people have loved this book, and I don't blame you for that. So go ahead, give it a shot. DC's Future State Aquaman number one. I'm still curious. I'm going to pick up the next issue and see where this thing goes. I'm not dropping it entirely. I just feel like there was something a little bit missing. Maybe I find that missing thing in the next issue. We'll see. This is one that is actually not coming out for another several days or so, so I'm not going to spoil this one from Dark Horse Comics. It's Fear Case number one, and a great team here. Matt Kent writing this one, Tyler Jenkins and Hillary Jenkins doing the art and the colors, respectively. Now, this story follows Detectives Winters and Mitchum, who work for the Secret Service, and that much I can tell you. They're trying to solve a case that's been unsolved for years. I mean, a long time, and it involves this mystery box or case. It's actually called the Fear Case. And that's the title of the book. That's not a spoiler. You should understand that it's the title of the book. Now, the case has kind of been seen throughout history, and that's explained throughout the story here, but it must be passed on. And this is in the synopsis for the book, by the way, so this isn't a spoiler either. Must be passed on within 3 days, or bad things will happen. That much I will tell you. Now, who has it and what it does exactly kind of remains a mystery throughout this issue. We've seen places where this thing has been, but where it currently is right this second as you're reading the story, we don't know that for sure. Even after one issue, though, I found myself wondering if I even wanted them to find this thing at all. That's how creepy and just uneasy you get once you learn about this fear case or fear box or whatever you want to call it. It's so bad that you're like, dude, I don't know if I want these guys to find it. Because you actually really start to, the more I read this book, the more I really got to like Winters and Mitchum. And I'm like, I don't know that I want you guys dealing with this thing. I don't know that I want you anywhere near it. So my likability for the characters kind of played into that. For one, for two, it's like, what happens to people who have had this box or been around it? I don't know. This doesn't seem like something that should be found ever. Now, I will say this. Winters and Mitchum definitely have this big brother, little brother dynamic, even though there's certainly a bit of an age difference there. So, again, that just makes me not want them to find this thing because it's so, you know, powerful and horrifically terrible that I don't want them to have anything to do with it because now I like these guys and I want them to stick around. This really does, though, feel like a detective story blended with a book like Harrow County, which is also a Dark Horse book. It's got this creepy, eerie vibe that, you know, and it seems like the story revolves around this object where, you know, like Harrow County, or in the early going, it was that tree, right? And now for this, it's this case, and bad things seem to just happen around these things. And of course, Harrow County evolved quickly after that, but at the same time, there's this just eerie vibe and a backdrop to it. And I give part of the credit to that to Tyler and Hillary Jenkins, because that art really just gives you that feeling from the start to the finish of this first issue. It almost feels like there's a haze throughout the whole thing, which kind of creates a metaphor of uncertainty as far as I'm concerned. So I'm all in on wherever this goes, and I have a feeling that I have no idea what the next twist is going to be. And to me, that is a tick in the win column, because I don't need to know right now. I need to feel like I'm not quite sure what's going to happen. And this book certainly delivered on that. Fear Case number one from Dark Horse Comics. Make sure you're picking it up this coming New Comic Book Day. That's going to do for what we're reading up next. Oh, there's going to be a lot of strong opinions on this first nerd news story, I've got a feeling. And there's some other interesting stuff as well. We'll find out more about it next. I'm James Witham, and this is the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is Aaron Pierre from Krypton, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Dreaming of the days where we could be on the con floor once again. It's time for nerd news. And this is one of those stories where you could easily just see the headline and react to that, and maybe not necessarily read the story. And I'm going to give you that headline now. This was first reported by Newsrama, that Image Comics and Skybound are planning on a cruise ship Comic Con. Yes, you heard me right. And now this is not an official thing yet. I want to make sure that is abundantly clear. Okay, but it would be planned for either 2022 or 2023. And again, not official, but they did send out a survey to gauge interest to certain fans and certain groups. So one of the questions actually in this story from Newsarama centered around when potential congoers would actually feel safe for such an event. Now, to me, and I'm going to take as many sides to this as I can, because it's easy to dunk on this idea right now, isn't it? Because it almost seems like it's something that could never happen. We're not in a stage of our existence right now where large gatherings or in any capacity seem possible in the near future. So you look at this and you think, well, 2022 is not that far away, right? So you can't imagine that something of a large gathering could be possible by then. But also could be possible, right? And by 2023, you'd certainly think that we have it together enough to be able to get things back to semi-normal, at least. But then I think of this idea of, okay, it's a cruise ship. And even pre-pandemic, cruise ships were, you know, there have been reports of outbreaks of, like, stomach flu and stuff like that on cruise ships. And, you know, you've heard that there was a story once, I think, that the ship was stranded and couldn't dock because there was something wrong with it, and people on the ship were eating ketchup packets and all this other stuff. And I'm not going to name names here because I don't remember exactly all the details of the story, but, you know, for every story I've heard of somebody that's gone on a cruise and had a great time, I've also heard stories of just these horrific conditions and, like, petri dish-like settings. And again, that is all pre-pandemic. And then you think about, you know, the very beginnings of this COVID pandemic and the stories that came from cruise ships in that regard. And imagine being stuck on a cruise ship that is also a comic book convention and the crowds that bring themselves on that thing. So, I mean, it's just right now, this is not the story you want to come out right now if you're Image Comics and Skybound. Because it's just, it's a bad look. And I'm sure that their intention was not for this to get out like this either. And you have to think ahead. That's the other thing that kind of needs to be understood here. I know we're worried about whether or not any conventions are going to be happening this year at all. We haven't heard a peep as far as when I'm recording this podcast anyway, about San Diego Comic-Con or WonderCon or Emerald City. None of these. It seems like we haven't heard a peep about any major convention because nobody's sure. Nobody knows what's going on and what's going to happen and what the future holds. So you were kind of in a holding pattern. But then you get this and you think there is no way in hell that this is even going to be possible. And I realize that I say this as someone who's not a fan of cruise ships and the idea of a cruise in general. I understand that I'm coming into that with this bias anyway. But then you think about that set in the backdrop of all of these other things that are going on. You think, nah, there are no way you could do this, right? And then you think, and again, no disrespect intended at all to anyone in Image Comics or Skybound. But at the same time, you're thinking, okay, if it's really going to be all about comics, like you say it's going to be, then how packed is this ship really going to be? Are you betting on the fact that people are going to be so amped up for a convention that they're going to jump at the chance to do this? And Image has a lot of very popular books and popular stories in Skybound. I know you've got The Walking Dead and Saga and several others, right? But to think you're going to pack a cruise ship for a convention, I don't know. I know that Image used to do Image Expo, right? And they've had certain, you know, events of their own before. They sort of adopted Emerald City for a couple years there as like their unofficial Image Expo thing. But that should tell you something, right? You used to do your own standalone Image Expo, and then you started piggybacking off of Emerald City. And again, I'm not saying that Image Comics and Skybound isn't a draw, but I mean, you're talking about cruises aren't cheap, okay? I don't care if this embarks from or disembarks from Miami or LA or where it's from. Cruises typically are not cheap no matter where they go. So you're asking fans to drop, I don't know, just off the top of my head, $500-$600 a piece to do this, and you're talking about Image Comics here. So unless you're bringing aboard like cast members from the Walking Dead TV series and other things that Image has coming up in the pipeline here and Skybound for as far as entertainment value is concerned, I don't know that you're going to get a ton of people, especially since there's so many people still recovering financially from the pandemic, and we don't know where they're going to be at in 2022 or 2023. So again, this is not something that's actually locked in happening, but this just does not feel like the time to be talking about it or even considering it as fans, right? Maybe this is something you're all in for and you definitely spend the money, you'd be down for it, and you're like, yes, I want to do this. It'd be a great chance to get a vacation in and a convention at the same time. There's other stuff to do on cruise ships. I understand all of those things. But at the same time, right now, regardless of how you feel about this pandemic and have felt about it and where we're at right now, it just seems too soon to even bring up. It feels like we need to get to a certain point. We're still talking about whether or not we're going to be able to fill movie theaters. I don't know how we even possibly entertain the idea of filling up a cruise ship to any sort of capacity. So, I don't know. To me, this feels like a pump the brakes type of situation. And I'm sure that, and I do not blame Image and Skybound at all for wanting to sort of test the waters on this, pun intended. But I don't know, it just feels like it's too soon, and I think that they're going to figure that out once they get through their surveys. Here's something that the second I saw it, again, this is one of those things, I see the subject in the email, and I go, this is perfect, I love this immediately. And that is Netflix talking about two new anime series that they're going to do, and it's from properties that you absolutely love. So you've got Skull Island, yes, that's Skull Island from King Kong. That's one of the anime series that they're going to be bringing. The other one, oh my goodness, I've been waiting for this, Tomb Raider. Yeah, so Tomb Raider's getting an anime series on Netflix, and so is Skull Island. Now, you want to be even more excited about Skull Island because Powerhouse Animation, yes, that powerhouse that does Castlevania and Blood of Zeus, yeah, they're going to be the animation studio for Skull Island. How amazingly awesome is that? And apparently, according to the logline that was sent to me from Netflix, it's going to be a thrilling animated adventure series that follows shipwrecked characters desperate to escape the most dangerous place on Earth, a mysterious island home to prehistoric monsters, including the greatest titan of them all, Kong. So you kind of get that Kong Skull Island movie vibe from this anime series, right? But then I think back to the Boom Studios version of this, right? And I think it was James Asmus and Carlos Magno doing the art on the Skull Island comic for Boom Studios. And I think it was Boom anyway. And that was such a fun and crazy story. And that's what I think of when I think of this potential anime series. So if it's anywhere even close to that, you throw in Powerhouse Animation Studios and, oh, yeah, I'm in. I am so freaking in for this. And then you look at Tomb Raider, which is going to follow the Square Enix Crystal Dynamics game franchise, not the movies. So I'm going to throw that out there right now. And it says it's going to pick up, the log line that was sent says it's going to pick up right after the event of the Tomb Raider video game reboot trilogy. And this, the animated series is going to chart the globetrotting heroine's latest greatest adventure 25 years after first appearing in video game, in her video game franchise. And Lara's going to be exploring new territory in this series. So we get virtually nothing as far as details go about this Tomb Raider series. But this is the first anime for Tomb Raider. And it seems like this is one of those where it's like, how has this not been done already, right? You can almost understand how Kong hasn't been done. You get that. But then you look at this and you go, how has this not been a thing already after 25 years? And then Netflix was smart enough to go, oh, yeah, well, we could do that. Yeah, no problem. We'll just go ahead and do that. And then and then you get an executive producer like Tasha Hu, who has done The Witcher Blood, who's going to be doing Witcher Blood Origin, and who's done Red Sonja. So, I mean, yeah, that just makes sense. A lot about this makes sense. And making this part of the video game lore and not the movie lore, I think is really, really smart move. So, I mean, Netflix is already working on the Pacific Rim series. I think it's called The Black. All right, Pacific Rim The Black, which is the anime series that's going to be coming from Legendary TV, who's going to be working on both of these series, by the way. This just feels like, I know that some of the other animes that have come out that have been based on major franchises haven't always worked out perfectly for Netflix. This one seems set up too big to fail, right? This one seems like it's absolutely 100% on. And I say this in the very early going, not seeing a trailer or anything like that, but this just seems like a no-brainer to me. And I'm glad that Netflix has realized that. And again, keep on working with Powerhouse Animation Studios. You want to give them you want to have them work on absolutely everything anime style. I'd be okay with that because everything they touch turns to gold. I'm sure Skull Island will be no different, but I'm really stoked for Tomb Raider as well. Sticking with animation here, I want to get into a little bit of trailer talk. I realized we haven't talked about Raya and the Last Dragon on the show yet, so I thought this would be a good opportunity since the new trailer came out. Of course, it's going to be coming to Disney Plus Premier Access and in theaters on March the 5th. And if you watch this new trailer, it's obvious that this is from the same studio that brought, you know, it's obvious it's Walt Disney, but the same people that were involved with Moana, because this really has a bit of a Moana vibe to it, if you ask me. And it's basically a story of this epic journey into this fantasy world where humans and dragons live together in harmony, and then the dragons sacrifice themselves to save humans, and now this evil is back, and Raya is going to be tracking down the last dragon. But as you can see, when Raya does find this dragon, Sisu, who is voiced by Awkwafina, you find out that this dragon's not the best dragon, you know, not the warrior dragon that you would expect, you know, to kind of unite the peoples of the world, because that's the other thing, that unity is a big part of this story as well, because everybody's kind of fighting and they need to come together because bad stuff is about to happen. By the way, Raya also voiced by Kelly Marie Tran. And you know, there's a little bit of a fun vibe to this. You like the thing with the baby in the beginning of the trailer, that was fun. There's a lot of serious stuff going on in this movie, and Raya is, you want to talk about a warrior, Raya is that you're not getting by me kind of warrior. Like, she is willing to throw down with anybody, anywhere, and do whatever is necessary to complete her mission. I love that about this character. She's just headstrong and, you know, maybe a little bit too much, right? But again, she's young. Again, like Moana, she is young and there's still a lot that she needs to learn. I mean, she's got her dad, who is amazing, played by Daniel Day-Kim, or I should say voiced by. And this is a great cast. You got Sandra Oh involved here, Benedict Wong, Alan Tudyk is actually a part of this cast as well, Gemma Chan. So there's a lot going for this cast already. But this just feels like an epic fantasy adventure, and there are few places that can even come close to matching what Walt Disney does with these fantasy type adventures. So it's almost like you're blending the best parts of Moana with this legendary dragon-like fantasy world as well. And I was already looking forward to this when I saw the first trailer. This trailer really brought me around to just like, I need this right now. Have to wait until March the 5th to see it. But this is one of those things that I need to see this now, because I think that this is obviously going to have a great message, because, you know, Disney does that. But at the same time, I think that this is going to just be a really cool and visually striking movie as well. So I can't wait for that. This next trailer I'm talking about could not possibly be more different than the one I just talked about. And that's for a new Amazon series called Tell Me Your Secrets, which is going to be coming up the first season. Basically, what we have here is this morally complex thriller, is how it's described. But as I watch this trailer, it feels like there's a lot to dig into. It's very psychological. There's, you know, morality kind of gets blurred here. And it does center around secrets in a way, but really, what it really centers around are these three characters. And that's Emma, who's played by Lily Rabb. You've also got another character in this, and that's Hamish Linklater's character, John. And then you've got Mary, who's played by Amy Brenneman, and she's a grieving mother. You've got Emma, who's kind of in witness protection right now, and John just happens to be a serial predator who's looking for redemption. Now, they kind of seem to get tangled up in the same story at some point, but that's not quite clear in the trailer. And then you even see Emma at the beginning of this trailer, and she's like, I'm not sure if these things that I'm seeing are nightmares or memories. And that, to me, that's what draws me in and goes and thinks there's more going on here than meets the eye. And that's what made this so interesting for me. And you find out that, you know, certain stuff starts to get revealed about their past, and, you know, like, who's the real victim here? That starts to come into play as well. So to me, and then you've got Harriet Warner, who's involved in this, the creator of the series, who did Dangerous Liaisons, and you're thinking, okay, well, that's a good connection that you can make there. So on February 19th, that's when these 10 episodes drop, and I think this one, there's just something about this that makes me go, I'm so invested in what's going to be happening in this series, so can't wait to bring you my review of that one when the time is right. I just think that this one has a lot of potential and a very underrated cast that you might not know all the names, but once you see what they can do, you're going to be all in for this series as well. Tell Me Your Secrets, coming February 19th on Amazon Prime Video. Quickly onto some casting news that came out this week. The Sandman cast for the upcoming Netflix series has been announced. At least the first wave of casting announcements has been made anyway. At least I think highlighted by Gwendolyn Christie is going to play Lucifer in the series. I think that is a big-time play. I think that Gwendolyn Christie is going to do a fantastic job in that role, and a very different Lucifer than the one that you're used to seeing on the other Netflix series played by Tom Ellis. So if you're thinking there's going to be any similarities there, nah, not at all. You'll see when you see the series. You've got Tom Surridge as Dream, Looks like that's pretty good casting there. Vivian Achampong as Lucien. You've got Charles Dance as Roderick Burgess. You've got Sanjeev Bhaskar as Kane. Asim Chaudhry as Abel. And Boyd Holbrook as the Corinthian. Now, I know if you're a fan of The Sandman, you're thinking, okay, well, did they cast Death? And, you know, maybe they're not going to have Death in season one. I kind of thought just because the character was so popular that they'd find a way to squeeze Death into this first season of the show. It doesn't look like that's going to be the case now. I don't hate that. I think it's fine. You focus on this cast and you go from there. You're introducing a lot of people to this story. There's plenty of people that aren't familiar with the story of The Sandman from Neil Gaiman and company. So this is a good way to introduce the story. And then, you know, you kind of cater to longtime fans after that, I think. And I know fans of The Sandman aren't going to want to hear that, but, you know, this book has had a cult following for a while. You need this to be a little bit more in the mainstream way of thinking. And I think you got to introduce the general public to your main cast first before you go making any crazy decisions on who else to bring in for a second season. You have to be lucky enough to get a second season too, though. So that there is a risk there as well. Speaking of more casting, we've got Titans adding yet another Robin for this season. And that is Tim Drake has been cast. And Jay Lycurgo is going to be playing that role. You might have seen Jay in I May Destroy You on HBO. Now, he also has a role in the upcoming Matt Reeves Batman movie. And I know what you're thinking, and no. I can't imagine that this is how they'd connect the Batman to the TV world, okay? No, he's not going to be playing Tim Drake in both. I just can't see that happening. I mean, stranger things have happened, right? But I sort of doubt that, okay? And you know how smart Tim is. You know how great Tim is. I know you love the character. And I'm excited to see what he's going to be bringing to Titans, but at the same time, it makes me think, okay, there's a lot of cooks in this kitchen, and somebody's got to go, okay? So somebody from this cast has got to go at some point, because they got a lot of balls in the air right now, and they just keep adding and adding and adding, and at some point, I got to start to worry if it's going to be too much. Now, I don't know how much of a role he's going to play in this upcoming third season. It could be right at the end of the season, during some sort of a transitional period, especially with whatever goes on with Jason Todd, Red Hood, who knows? But, you know, the fact that there really isn't a Robin right now on the show, technically, because you've got Dick Grayson's now Nightwing, and we know that the whole Red Hood thing is going to be happening. So now you've got no Robin, and of course, you know, Batman's not going to be without a Robin forever. Enter Tim Drake. And it was only a matter of time before they cast Tim Drake for this series anyway. So, I mean, again, very early on, we'll have to wait and see. We haven't even seen a trailer, anything, for season 3 of Titans. But, I mean, with the move to HBO Max, they're going to go big. You had to know that. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. Again, thanks to the cast of Sci-Fi's Resident Alien for joining me this week. Hopefully you're watching that show every Wednesday night at 10 o'clock Eastern Time on Sci-Fi. Also, thanks to our sponsor this week, Care Of. Make sure you go to takecareof.com. Enter code NERDY50. I want you to get 50% off your first Care Of order and take care of yourself early here in 2021. You want to find out more about what we've got going on? Always go to downandnerdypodcast.com. Also, follow along on social media at downandnerdy757 on Twitter, on Instagram, and at downandnerdy on Facebook. Remember, you never have to apologize for being a nerd, so let your fan flag fly and be good to your fellow nerds.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
What else would it be?
Sure. A serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.